Chapter 13. Death of a Pacifist. Each day the dispatches received in Berlin from the German diplomats in St. Petersburg were more disturbing. On July 30, 1914, a telegram from the ambassador, Portales, dispensed with all further doubt. It listed, one by one, the districts in Western Russia where mobilization was in full swing. In the Warsaw district, at that time near Germany's eastern border, and in Suwalki, on the threshold of East Prussia, the progress of the Russian mobilization couldn't be concealed. German spies and informers, as well as the German consul at Alenj, stressed the imminence of Russia's advance. Preparations were visible even from the German sentry boxes on the frontier, across which the Russian troops were hastily demolishing their border outposts, and from which flames now blazed in the night. By that evening Moltke had confirmed from reliable sources that the Russian mobilization was effective and total. The next morning he telegraphed his colleague in Austria, General Konrad von Hotzendorf. Mobilize. Germany will mobilize with you. Even then the Kaiser was still seeking to steer Austria's Franz Joseph toward negotiation with the Russians. The Austrian Emperor's foreign minister, Berchtold, was confused by the conflicting messages from Berlin. "Who is in command at Berlin?" he exclaimed. "Von Moltke, or the Kaiser?" To be sure, von Moltke had temporarily exceeded his prerogatives. But on that morning Portales had been able to confront Sazonov in St. Petersburg with a public mobilization poster. Time was growing short for the Germans, and even Kaiser Wilhelm was losing faith in a peaceful solution. The message of the Tsar, that he could no longer resist the pressures of his advisors, had reached him on the 30th, and Wilhelm had conceded, "My mission as a peacemaker is over." Meanwhile, in Paris, Poincaré was about to be rid of the last consequential French opponent of his war schemes. Jean Jaurès, leader of the French Socialists and president of the Second International, was a cultivated man. He was well versed in the Latin and Greek classics, and had learned Spanish to read Don Quixote in the original, as well as English to tackle Hume and Shakespeare. A magnificent orator who, despite his piercing blue eyes, hailed from the south of France, he lived a respectable, indeed bourgeois life. He had none of the venality which had enabled so many French politicians to pile up private fortunes from their public, and not so public, activities. On July 29 in Brussels, Jaurès had made a last effort to stop the war by addressing a great convocation of socialist leaders from all over Europe, gathered under the auspices of the Second International at the Royal Circus, a vast stately hall where this writer would address the Brussels public for the first time 30 years later. That day Jaurès was particularly moving, for to him, the peace of Europe had never been more menaced since the Napoleonic Wars of a century before. Great cries of "Down with war!" had rung out at the conclusion of his speech, many undoubtedly from the same throats that would a few days later give their passionate assent to war in parliaments and national assemblies across Europe. Jaurès left the hall with heavy foreboding despite his tumultuous send-off. He had time to see the Flemish primitives in all their splendor at the Brussels Museum before catching the train to Paris. In Paris Jaurès proceeded directly to the foreign ministry to try to exact a promise from Viviani that the government would try to calm the Russians. When he learned that Poincaré had just given full support to the Russian mobilization, he warned Viviani. "You are victims of Izvolsky and of a Russian plot. We are going to denounce you feather-brained ministers, even if we're shot at." As Jaurès left the building on the Quai d'Orsay he encountered Izvolsky. Staring him hard in the face, he said, "This scum Izvolsky is going to have his war." That evening Jaurès read in a newspaper, if France had a leader who was a man, Jaurès would be put up against the wall at the same time as the mobilization posters. Shaking his head, he said under his breath, "We must expect to be assassinated at the first street corner." That same night a young man was snooping around Jaurès' house at Passy. When Jaurès approached with several friends, the young man, whose name was Raoul Villain, asked an onlooker which one was Jaurès. On learning, he slipped away into the darkness. On the next morning, while the streets of Paris teemed with demonstrators and frightened holders of bank accounts, withdrawals of more than 50 francs from checking accounts had just been forbidden, Villain searched for his prey. Unsuccessful at Jauer's newspaper office, Villain finally traced the great socialist leader to his café, the Croissant. Then Jauer sat admiring a photograph of a journalist friend's granddaughter. The window behind his table was open, only a curtain separating Jauer's from the street. Imperceptibly a hand pushed the cloth aside. Then there was a flash, and two shots split the air. Jauer's slumped over his plate. A woman screamed, "Jauer's has been killed," and the last great opponent of the war joined those slain at Sarajevo. The rumor ran through Paris that Jauer's had been shot by a Tsarist agent, forcing the government to blockade the Rue de Grenelle, where the Russian embassy stood like a citadel and where the Russian secret police, the Okhrana, had its Paris headquarters. The Russian embassy today houses the offices of the Okhrana's far more powerful successor, the KGB. No evidence was ever produced that the Russian secret service was behind Jauer's assassination, and it is likely that Villain, the son of a madman, a fanatical nationalist whose mind had been inflamed by the stridency of the warmongering press, acted alone. Nevertheless, his bullets were as effective against the last great voice against the war in France as had been those of the Russian conspirators' hirelings against the archducal couple in Sarajevo. On the same day that Jauer's was gunned down, Poincaré succeeded in having Kalos, his erstwhile opponent, who had been brought low by Calmette of the Figaro, hustled out of Paris by two policemen. Now the road to Berlin lay open.